So a couple of people have asked my opinion on this Tommy Robinson situation. For those of you who don't know, maybe you're not from the UK, or maybe you just don't keep up with these kind of things. Tommy Robinson was the founder of a far-right nationalist organization called the EDL, the English Defence League. And he's been linked to and involved with several other far-right British nationalist movements since then. I don't believe he's part of the EDL anymore. I think he was also something to do with the Britain First organization. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But either way, that's what he is a far-right nationalist who is against immigrants. He's against immigration. He's against Muslims specifically. He's taken a hardline stance against Muslims and Islam. So that's who he is. And he's been arrested apparently numerous times. He's been imprisoned before for various different things. And the latest episode with Tommy Robinson has seen him apparently arrested outside a courthouse for breach of the peace, because there was a trial going on in this courthouse, a trial of a bunch of Asian Muslim people who had been charged with grooming young girls to be sex slaves or something of the like. So my take on it, well, I really can't talk about Tommy Robinson without talking about another guy. And to me, they're just inextricably linked. And the other guy is Anjem Chowdhury, who is basically the polar opposite of Tommy Robinson. I mean, he's the yin to Tommy Robinson's yang. In fact, let me not even call him a polar opposite, but he is the embodiment of apparently most of the things that Tommy Robinson is against. Anjem Chowdhury is described as a radical Islamist and the most prominent radical Islamist in the UK over the past couple of decades, I guess. Now, the reason why I mention these two together is because I always say that if, and this is just my view on it, right? This is what makes logical sense to me. If somebody is a genuine rebel, a genuine threat to the establishment, a genuine threat to the peace, a genuine threat to the powers that be, they will not be given a platform with which to convey their message. They just won't be. They will certainly not be allowed column inches and airtime in the mainstream media for several years running. It just won't happen. The old boys network who control the mainstream media, if they perceive you as a real threat, they'll just shut you down and you'll never be able to speak. There won't be any interviews year after year and big public incidents. There won't be none of that. It'll all be hush hush. The old boys network that control the media won't give you any kind of, won't pay you any kind of lip service, and you'll just disappear. Maybe not physically disappear, although that could happen too, but certainly you'll disappear from the public eye. This is what will happen to you if you're a genuine threat. So when I see people like Tommy Robinson and Anjem Chowdhury continuously getting mainstream media headlines year in, year out, it makes me suspicious. Now, particularly when it comes to Anjem Chowdhury, who's this supposed radical Islamist, I'm someone who is a pretty good judge of character. I'm a pretty good judge of somebody's body language, etc. And whenever I look at this Anjem Chowdhury guy, I just get the feeling that he's lying. I look at his face and the look in his eyes, and to me, he just looks like a dishonest person who's not telling the truth. Now, there is an article which I'll leave a link to below, which the title to the article is MI5 stopped Scotland Yard taking Chowdhury down, sources claim. So this Telegraph article, all right, this is a mainstream press article, claims that MI5 stopped the police from prosecuting Chowdhury or taking him down, however you want to describe it. So the inference is that Chowdhury is some kind of MI5 asset. Now, I personally would be amazed if Anjem Chowdhury isn't an asset of British intelligence. I'd be amazed if he isn't, because of the fact that the guy's been given a platform for so long and he's able to stir up all these racial and ethnic tensions in Britain to perpetuate this divide and rule tactic, which the British have been using, you know, the British establishment have been using for centuries. So even in the mainstream press, there's talk about this guy being British intelligence or an asset of British intelligence. What would be his function beyond perpetuating divide and conquer or divide and rule? I also think that people like Anjem Chowdhury, if indeed he is an intelligence asset, I don't know for certain, I can't prove it for certain, but I strongly suspect that he is. Another function of being an asset in his position would be to act as a honey trap. They can put somebody at a honey trap, just basically to explain it. If you want to attract bees, right? Let's just say you're a bee hunter. You want to attract and capture some bees. What do? You put a pot of honey out there and the bees will come, and then you can capture the bees, right? Same way intelligence agencies will put a pot of honey, an individual like Anjem Chowdhury out there, and they will attract the kind of people who they want to capture or want to monitor. And that's what I think Anjem Chowdhury is. He's an intelligence agency honey trap. And I know the word honey trap is often used to describe, you know, women who ensnare, who are used to ensnare people. But in this instance, I'll just use it for this guy. So that's what I suspect he is an intelligence asset. Yeah. And again, it's not so far-fetched. Even the mainstream media are talking about, you know, claims that he's an intelligence asset. And some people might say, well, isn't that a bit counterintuitive for the mainstream media to be outing him as an intelligence asset? If he was an intelligence asset, why would the powers that be allow the mainstream media to report it? And that's a pretty good question. But I think that people don't really pay attention. The general public don't really pay attention to a lot of these things. And I think that the press is not controlled completely, okay? The British press has freedom up to a certain level. And I think the employees, most of the journalists within the British press, don't necessarily know their boundaries. It's only once they cross their boundary and they do something which is gonna seriously upset the powers that be, that a superior, somebody from high up in the organization will come down and say, no, you can't do this for whatever reason. So I don't, you know, when I say the press are controlled, I'm not talking on a micromanaged level. I'm talking on the macro level, they're controlled. So anyway, my view is, I strongly suspect Chowdhury is an intelligence asset, and he may have been co-opted to become an intelligence asset. You know, he may have started out just as a genuine Muslim or maybe a genuine radical Muslim. I don't know. But these people are often co-opted and they're often forced to work as intelligence assets against their will, essentially. They're blackmailed a lot of the time. Now, how this relates to Tommy Robinson, and I'll get onto the specifics of, you know, his recent arrests, but Tommy Robinson, I don't think it's as clear cut with him whether he's an intelligence asset, but I suspect that he is, because of the fact, again, he has been given a platform to speak and convey his message for year in, year out, this man. If they really wanted to silence him, he would have been silenced a long time ago, and he just wouldn't be given a platform to speak in the media. Ongoing, you know? Well, I'll leave a link in the description below to this Huffington Post article. And this is from 2015, so 3 years ago. And in this Huffington Post article, It talks about Tommy Robinson claiming that police tried to blackmail him into spying on Britain First's Paul Golding. So here we have Tommy Robinson himself claiming that the police have tried to co-opt him into becoming a double agent, basically. You know? And again, people are going to say, if he was an intelligence agent, would he be saying stuff like this? But as I just said a few moments ago, these guys are co-opted. So Tommy Robinson may have started out as a genuine far-right British nationalist who had no intention of working as a double agent, you know, as an intelligence asset. But once they get a certain amount of dirt on you, you don't really have any choice. You want to go to jail for a long time, or you want to work for us? So, yeah, and sometimes they unwittingly become intelligence assets. Sometimes it's not even a case of them realizing they're an asset, but they're being manipulated in such a way where they become an asset, if that makes sense. So, yeah, with Tommy Robinson, I don't think it's as clear cut, but what I will say is he's clearly useful to the powers that be. He's clearly a useful tool. Even if he's not a knowing asset, he's clearly a useful tool for them, or else the media wouldn't be paying him so much lip service for so many years. And of course, he has to represent the disaffected native working class Brits. He has to represent them. If they're to use him as an asset of divide and rule, then he has to be seen to be unfairly treated. That's how it works. This is why I always say Donald Trump is blatantly an asset of the establishment. Because the mainstream media in the United States have continuously attacked Donald Trump. But he's not silenced. He was allowed to get to the White House. And all the mainstream media in America ever do is talk about Donald Trump. In fact, all they ever did was talk about him ever since he was running for president. You see, so this idea that he's really a rebel, I just don't buy it, or else they wouldn't be talking about him. They'd just silence him some other way and you wouldn't hear nothing about him. I'm not necessarily saying kill him, blackmail him, do whatever they had to do. You know? So when it comes to Tommy Robinson, same thing. They have to attack him in the press to make an example of him, because that gets the demographic that Tommy Robinson is appealing to sympathize with him and to say, look, we're an oppressed group here. We're not allowed to express our views. We're not allowed to say what's on our mind. And the people who we view as the enemy, they're protected. You see? So they have to keep Tommy Robinson getting arrested in all these public situations where he's causing controversy and whatnot. And it looks like the powers that be are against him. That's how you sell him as a genuine rebel, by making it look as though the powers that be are against him. And, you know, some people are going to say, well, this is far-fetched, Hatman. Come on now. This all sounds a bit convoluted to be true. Well, I don't know what some people think MI5 do all day. Well, you think they sit around making paper airplanes and origami unicorns and playing noughts and crosses, twiddling their thumbs? Like, what do you think the intelligence agencies actually do all day? Oh, well, they're counterterrorism. That's what they do all day. Really? That's all they do, yeah? So what happened before 9/11 and 7/7? What were they doing then? Oh, the IRA. Okay, well, what happened before the IRA? Like, the intelligence agencies do a whole heap of different things. It's not just counterterrorism or whatever, counterintelligence. No, there's all kinds of different things that the intelligence agencies do. They're involved in propaganda, they're involved in PR stunts, they're involved in infiltrating news organizations, the media, so on and so forth. And a good example of this would be Jon Snow, okay? The Channel 4 journalist Jon Snow. Go to his Wikipedia page, check it out. I'm not making it up. There's a direct quote from Jon Snow where he talks about MI5 trying to recruit him. I believe this was in the late 70s, early 80s. He said he was approached by MI5, who told him that they would double his salary and that the doubling of his salary would be off the books. So this extra money would not be traceable. And for doubling his salary and it would be tax-free, he would be required to spy on his colleagues who had left-wing political views. This is what Jon Snow said, all right? A mainstream media journalist. Now, you're not going to try to tell me that that was a one-off. How many people, how many journalists didn't turn down? Because Jon Snow says he turned down the offer from MI5. How many mainstream journalists didn't turn it down? So, yeah, the intelligence agencies, of course, they're involved in this kind of stuff. I mean, when you look at the drummer Lee Rigby incident, let's just call it that. One of the alleged perpetrators of this drummer Lee Rigby incident, friends of his came out after the fact and said that he'd been approached by MI6 and MI5 and that they were trying to recruit him as an asset. This was also reported in the mainstream media. The intelligence agencies are always involved in clandestine activities. What do you think they're doing all day? It amazes me that people hear me talk about these kind of things and act as though this is far-fetched. It's not far-fetched. As I said, intelligence agencies are not sitting around all day making origami unicorns and playing noughts and crosses. That's not what they do. So anyway, Tommy Robinson, to me, is... I'm not as certain with him as I am with Chowdhury, but I think he's an intelligence asset, whether he realizes it or not, because of the fact that he's been given this platform for so many years. And ideologically, obviously, I do not agree with Tommy Robinson at all, for the most part. I am an advocate for indigenous people having control over their country. You know, I've said before in previous podcasts that I'm an advocate for indigenous people of various continents being the only people who are allowed to own businesses on those continents. So, for example, white Europeans being the only people allowed to own businesses or own land in Europe. Black people being the only people who are allowed to own land or own businesses in Africa. So on and so forth. Now, there are many countries out there which follow a similar, similar policy to what I'm describing. For example, Cambodia. In Cambodia, foreigners are not allowed to acquire land. Now, apparently there are some loopholes and ways around it in Cambodia, but officially, foreigners are not allowed to buy land in Cambodia. And with regards to businesses, as one of my subscribers pointed out previously, in the Middle East, in places like the UAE, etc., or many of those countries on the Arabian Peninsula, the rich countries, all businesses have to be at least part-owned by a native. So if you want to set up a business in one of those rich Arab countries, you have to have an Arab person who's at least a silent partner, or else you won't be able to set up the business. I'm an advocate for this kind of thing because it keeps the country in the hands of the natives, you know, and that's part of my philosophy. I think that that's a better way to go about doing things because I think there's just so much exploitation that goes on when foreign people are allowed to control the land and control the natural resources and control the economy of countries to a great extent. There's just so much exploitation that goes on because ultimately foreigners don't have, you know, a lot of the time foreigners don't have the best interests of the natives at heart. They're trying to do it for themselves in their own country. So this is why, you know, I believe that only natives of a particular continent should be able to own land, own natural resources and own businesses. Yeah, I think it would eliminate a lot of problems in this world if that was going on. I mean, you just look at Africa, how much Africa's being exploited by people from various different continents, from China, Europe, etc. That wouldn't be able to go on if the policy I'm talking about was in force. And it would obviously have to be an international policy. And it's pie in the sky. It's never going to happen in our lifetimes. But we all have our own philosophies. But with regards to that element of Tommy Robinson's philosophy. I guess he may be on the same kind of page with stuff like that. But Tommy Robinson is part of the far right in the UK, the far right nationalist movement. And they just tend to hate anybody who's not white British, regardless of whether they own land, regardless of what they're doing. If you're not white British, we don't like you, essentially. That is the majority of people in the far right in the UK. Yeah. And regardless of what religion you are, Tommy Robinson has made a point of attacking and demonizing Muslims, which is another reason I think he is being used as an intelligence asset. He has painted Islam out to be the most evil religion going. And as somebody who has lived in the Middle East and lived among Muslim people, my experience is the antithesis. You know, my experience among Muslims was the antithesis of what Tommy Robinson describes when it comes to the way Muslims live. I found Muslim communities that I lived in to be far more peaceful, far more orderly, and far more harmonious, actually, than the average working class white community in Britain. I found working class white communities in Britain, not all of them, but you know, a lot of them, to be far more hostile to foreigners than your average Muslim Arab community. Arab people, as long as you are someone who respects their conservative values, you know, being socially conservative, you don't have to be the same religion as them. As long as you respect their conservative values and, you know, running around drunk in the street, and if you're a woman, wear it, you know, walking around in a bikini and stuff like that. As long as you're not doing none of that, as long as you're dressed conservatively, you don't have to be dressed in a hijab. Unless you're in Saudi Arabia, you don't have to be dressed in none of that, right? Just dress conservatively, sensibly, and be respectful, and people will be very nice to you in Muslim countries. They're very welcoming, very hospitable, very friendly, very chatty people. And you'll see when you live amongst them and when you see how their communities run, it's very harmonious. I'm not saying it's perfect, all right? Not at all. Every society and every community has their issues. But when I compare the way they live to the way a lot of working class white Brits live on council estates and whatnot, and the vibe that I get, you know, as a black man going into a working class area of Britain, it's night and day. It's way more hostile in a working class area, a white area of Britain, regardless of what religion you are. If you're not the right color, it can be very hostile. And that is just not something that I experienced living among Arab Muslims at all. Yeah, I found them to be far more open to outsiders, as long as you're respectful of them. And as I say, with a lot of these far right working class British communities, it doesn't matter whether you respect their culture. They don't care about your culture. They don't care about your sensibilities. What they don't like is the fact that you're not white. You understand what I'm saying? So there's nothing you can do about it. If you are not an Arab, if you're a white person walking through one of these Arab Muslim communities that I've lived in the Middle East, you ain't going to have no problems. Nobody's just going to come out and attack you because you're white, or come out and attack you because you're black. No, that's not going to happen. That was never my experience. People were very, very friendly and very inquisitive, wanting to chat to you and see who you are. People are just very, very friendly in general. That's how I found the Arabs anyway. I don't know about Muslims from other countries, but the Arabs I found to be very inquisitive and friendly. And it does vary between different Arab countries, right? Not all Arabs behave in the same way. But the countries that I lived in, this is how people were. They were very friendly and nice, and there was no issue. So Tommy Robinson and his ilk, the way they portray Islam and Muslim people is completely different to my experience with Muslim people. Just the absolute polar opposite, you know, the polar opposite. And I've had far more issues with people like Tommy Robinson growing up in Britain than any Muslim I've ever encountered, including in the native homeland of Muslims, the Middle East. So, yeah. So I'm definitely not on the same page as Tommy Robinson there. With regards to these Muslim grooming gangs, they definitely exist in Britain and I'm sure other places in the world. But grooming gangs of all ethnicities exist. There are plenty of white grooming gangs in the UK. You know, I mean, we've seen the historical, so-called historical child abuse scandal that's been going on over many years with the paedophile rings mainly abusing young boys. I mean, how many of these paedophile rings haven't been exposed? You know, there's child trafficking that goes on with different Eastern European communities within the UK, the Chinese community. You know, this is well known. So to hone in on the mainly, South Asian, Pakistani / Bangladeshi, etc., Muslim community and say, oh, it's all them. They're overrepresented when it comes to grooming gangs. I just don't buy it. I don't buy it at all. I think you're going to find horrible, scummy people in every community, you know, to varying degrees of frequency. So anyway, moving on from that. So, I'm obviously not on the exact same page as Tommy Robinson ideologically. But regards to his latest arrest for breaching the peace, I haven't been following it close enough to be able to tell you whether I agree with him being arrested or not, because the judge has said, I'm going to quote the judge here. The judge says, this is not about free speech, not about freedom of the press, not about legitimate journalism, and not about political correctness. It's about justice and ensuring that a trial can be carried out justly and fairly. It's about being innocent until proven guilty. It is about preserving the integrity of the jury to continue without being intimidated or being affected by irresponsible, inaccurate reporting, if that's what it was. So that's what the judge said. Now, that don't sound unreasonable to me, what the judge said. But, you know, judges and authorities can use soft language like that, you know, reasonable language when they're doing things that are very unreasonable. So I don't know. I wasn't there. But all I would say in general with regards to things like this is I'm in favor of free speech. I'm not in favor of, you know, particularly when it comes to things like this, expressing your political views and whatnot, as long as you're not advocating the physical violence, you know, physical violence towards anybody, then I'm in favor of free speech. This situation in the UK now where you can be locked up for a racial slur, I don't agree with it. You know, people come at me with racial slurs online all the time. Do you think I'm trying to prosecute these people and go to the police? Hell no. I don't think you should be able to prosecute somebody for using a racial slur. It's ridiculous. It's an insult at the end of the day. Yes, it has connotations behind it, but if they're constantly harassing you, we've got laws already in the UK to deal with harassment. We've got laws already to deal with inciting violence. There are already laws in place for that. You don't need to lock people up specifically for using certain words. You know, I'm not in favor of that at all. I'm definitely in favor of people being able to express views that are not politically correct without fear of being thrown in prison. Yeah. I do think there has to be some limit, right? I do think there has to be some limit. I mean, if somebody comes out advocating paedophilia, you know, they want to have relations between adults and 8-year-olds, that might be something we should look to have people put in prison for, okay? So I can't say freedom of speech completely, but certainly more freedom of speech than currently exists in Britain or a lot of nations around the world, you know? And someone like Tommy Robinson, who I think is very ignorant, I don't want to take away an individual like that's freedom of speech. You know, he should be able to have a voice and say what he wants to say without being arrested. But then again, some people are going to say, why does he need to make an example of himself? Why does he need to do it outside of a courthouse? you know, while the trial is going on. With social media today, couldn't he just do a YouTube video? Couldn't he just do a demonstration elsewhere? Because he's going for maximum publicity, doing it outside the courthouse, knowing there's a chance he's going to get arrested, because he's been arrested before, right? He's been harassed by police before. So he must know there's a very good chance of it happening to him again. He's a well-known face, you know? So he must know there's a very good chance of it happening to him again. So some people would say this is a publicity stunt by Tommy Robinson. That he knows he's going to get arrested. He wants to get arrested, or he wants there to be some kind of hoopla, because it gets him more publicity. It gets him and his cause more publicity. So those are my thoughts on Tommy Robinson and his latest run-in with the law. You know, I strongly suspect that if he's not an asset of the intelligence agencies, he's a tool, okay? And the difference between a tool and an asset in this particular instance is a tool is someone who is being used by the powers that be without necessarily knowing that they're being used. Whereas an asset is someone who knows they're being used, okay? And I might change that and use those terms in a different context, in a different podcast, but for right now, that's how I mean it. So yeah, those are my thoughts on Tommy Robinson and this grooming gang situation. You know, I just think he's an asset. That's just my view. A tool, if not an asset. And same with Anjem Chowdhury. Those two just seem to go hand in hand. Both of them getting mainstream media coverage year in, year out. Why can these people never be silenced? You know, Anjem Chowdhury, they say he's in prison and they say this, that, and the other about him. You know, sometimes I have to question whether these guys are even in prison when they say they're in prison. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they are, but I have to question it at least. Because, as I say, intelligence agencies behave in a clandestine fashion. They're not going to do everything above board. That's the whole point of being intelligence agencies. They have to be covert with what they're doing. They're not going to publicize it all the time. So, yeah, those are my feelings on Tommy Robinson. Hope you guys got something from it. You at least know where I stand on it. All right? It's happening. I'm out.